enable our thoughts to take shape in the first place. We will now look at how brain cells communicate with one another, transmitting information throughout the brain to form ideas, memories, and feelings, and how much, if not most, of this process is literally based on protein. If you were to gaze into the brain through a microscope, you would witness a peculiar sight. The human brain is packed with an incredible array of brain cells, each one a different shape and size. Some might look like stars, and others more like trees, each one sporting its own signature branch structure. Another grouping might look more like spiders, while others appear more like kites trailing their long tails. Some even look like carrots with their leafy tops. These stars, trees, spiders, kites, and carrots are all working diligently to carry messages back and forth, keeping the communication going among all the various brain regions before further branching out to share the information with the rest of your body. The orchestra of our central nervous system, for which the brain is the conductor, is composed of over 80 billion brain cells, called neurons. Neurons are unique among all the cells that make up our bodies because of their ability to send signals to other cells, no matter how far the distance. It's precisely these varying shapes and sizes that enable them to do so. Throughout this amazing electrical relay, our neurons do not actually touch. Their bodies, or axons, end in several synapses, which are the tiny gaps that separate one neuron from the next and act as connection points. Every neuron has between 1,000 and 10,000 synapses, totaling an astounding 100 trillion connections overall. Each electrical impulse traverses many synapses as it makes its way through the nervous system. This neurotransmission is carried out by neurotransmitters, the chemical messengers of the brain. Neurotransmitters are in charge of dispatching information from cell to cell. The continued, incessant influx of neurotransmitters is precisely what gives birth to our thoughts, memories, and words, and even gives us a good night's sleep, setting the stage for healthy mental functioning. The human brain relies on the well-orchestrated action of over 100 neurotransmitters, each with its own specialty and particular chemical makeup. Some of these neurotransmitters have a profound effect in our cognitive performance and mental capacities. One, called serotonin, influences your emotional stability and sleep patterns, but also memory and appetite. Another, called dopamine, is responsible for reward-motivated behavior, movement control, and cravings. Additionally, there's glutamate, a neurotransmitter responsible for provoking you to spring into action, and its alter ego, gamma-aminobutyric acid, GABA, that inhibits you from acting at all. We can all imagine just how deeply these molecules affect our brain power and mental abilities. As it turns out, many cognitive issues arise as a consequence of neurotransmitter abnormalities. For example, a marked reduction of the neurotransmitter serotonin, the one essential for mood, memory, and appetite, is a typical finding in patients with depression, which in turn can affect memory and attention. What could be causing this depletion of our neurotransmitters? You guessed it, a poor diet. Our neurotransmitters are created from one source, our food. A closer look at the neurotransmission process reveals a surprising fact. Neurotransmitters are not sitting around waiting to shuttle their next signal. They are actually produced each and every time there is a need to carry one of the brain's various messages. They report for duty when a message presents itself and disappear again once their mission is complete. This incredibly sophisticated and yet delicate process is intrinsically dependent on several nutrients extracted from the foods we eat day after day. Consequently, the production of neurotransmitters inside the brain responds quite rapidly to changes in our diet, especially our protein intake. Sleep, daydream, and remember with serotonin. Serotonin has been mainly associated with our moods, as this neurotransmitter signals our brains when we are feeling relaxed and happy. When the brain produces low levels of serotonin, happy signals become much less frequent and short-lived, eventually producing diseases such as depression and anxiety. Serotonin is also largely acknowledged for its role in sleep and appetite regulation. Less well known is that its depletion can also be responsible for some aspects of the memory impairments associated with advancing age and dementia. Food is the essential impetus for serotonin production. In fact, the production of serotonin in the brain is based on the presence of the amino acid tryptophan and is critically dependent on how much tryptophan is available to the brain. Tryptophan is an essential amino acid, meaning it cannot be produced in the body at all. Consequently, the only way we can make it available to our brains is through the foods we eat on a daily basis. What foods provide us with tryptophan, and how can we get enough of it? According to current dietary guidelines, the average adult, man or woman, needs 5 milligrams of tryptophan per kilogram of body weight daily. For example, the recommended dose for a 175-pound, 79-kilogram adult is 395 milligrams of tryptophan per day. This brain essential nutrient is not too difficult to come by. Several foods contain tryptophan, especially those rich in animal or plant-based protein. But there's a catch. Tryptophan generally takes a back seat to other amino acids in terms of how often and how easily it is absorbed by the brain. Additionally, less than 10% of all the tryptophan that we import from our diet is used to make serotonin. Consequently, it's even more important that we consume enough tryptophan-rich foods every day to reach a level that makes a difference in our brains. Many common foods are good sources of tryptophan. It's interesting to note that although popular lore leads us to believe that tryptophan is responsible for the drowsiness we feel after a turkey dinner, turkey ranks quite low on the list of tryptophan-rich foods. Chia seeds, instead, rank at the top. Chia is one of nature's powerhouse plant-based foods. These tiny brown seeds have long been known for their high nutritional value and ability to provide sustainable energy. Chia is the ancient Mayan word for strength. In fact, ancient Aztec and Mayan warriors literally survived on rations of chia at times, as did long-distance runners and messengers. 2 tablespoons of chia seeds contain over 200 milligrams of the tryptophan your brain needs to make serotonin, as well as a good amount of omega-3 PUFAs, minerals, and fiber. Additionally, plant-based foods like raw cacao, chocolate, wheat, oats, spirulina, and sesame and pumpkin seeds figure prominently among the richest natural sources of tryptophan on the planet. Animal foods like milk, yogurt, chicken, and fish like tuna and salmon are also a good start. In particular, yogurt is an excellent protein source with many health benefits, especially for the digestive system. However, I am not talking about the sugary, creamy, fruity yogurt-like substances you find in bright packages on supermarket shelves. Those products are full of artificial sweeteners and colorants, not to mention preservatives, and will do nothing to help your brain stay healthy over time. When I say yogurt, I mean organic, plain, tart yogurt, preferably full fat, and from goat's milk for an extra protein kick. If you don't like tart flavors, I recommend you sweeten the yogurt yourself with raw honey, maple syrup, or fresh fruit. In general, tryptophan is found in many common foods, so deficiencies are unlikely. However, too little protein in the diet can cause a deficit. If you are a vegan or eat very little animal protein, your tryptophan levels might be low. In that case, make sure you are eating enough of the richest vegetarian sources. Additionally, tryptophan, in the form of 5-hydroxytryptophan or 5-HTP, can be taken as dietary supplements. Here's another trick. Research has shown that eating carbohydrates with or immediately after tryptophan-rich foods helps increase its absorption, thereby increasing serotonin production. This observation is at the heart of many nutritionists' recommendations to eat some carbs for dinner, to promote tryptophan absorption and facilitate sleep. When I was little, my mama would make me a cup of warm milk with honey before bed to help me fall asleep. Little did she know that this simple practice helps tryptophan get through to the brain, boosting serotonin production and therefore sleep. Finally, sometimes the problem is not tryptophan availability as much as a vitamin deficiency. Although tryptophan is indispensable for serotonin production, vitamin B6 is also needed to convert tryptophan into serotonin. As we'll see in the next chapters, this vitamin truly is a brain must, as it is crucial not only for serotonin production, but also for several other neurotransmitters. Dopamine, mind your step. Although serotonin gets a lot of mainstream attention, and most of the hype, dopamine has been gaining increasing popularity due to its role in cognitive function. Dopamine impacts our reward, motivation, and attention functions, as well as problem-solving and motor control, not to mention allowing us to feel pleasure in the first place. Dopamine abnormalities are involved in several medical conditions, including Parkinson's disease, attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, ADHD, schizophrenia, and drug addiction. This neurotransmitter is manufactured in the brain by breaking down the amino acid tyrosine. Tyrosine is a non-essential amino acid, which means our bodies are capable of producing this nutrient on their own. But there's a catch. Tyrosine needs to be produced from another amino acid called phenylalanine, which happens to be an essential amino acid, meaning it must be obtained from our diet instead. What this all boils down to is that without eating foods containing phenylalanine, we might as well kiss goodbye our pleasurable strolls in the park or playing our favorite games, let alone enjoying the thrill of winning them. In order to be sure you're getting enough of these nutrients, keep an eye on the recommended dose of phenylalanine and tyrosine. We all need 33 milligrams per kilogram of body weight per day. For example, the recommended dose for a 175-pound, 79-kilogram adult, man or woman, is 2.6 grams per day. Phenylalanine is found in many high-protein animal products, such as chicken, beef, eggs, and fish, particularly fatty fish like salmon, striped bass, and halibut, as well as dairy products such as milk and yogurt. Plant-based foods are also excellent sources, particularly legumes like soybeans and peanuts, nuts like almonds, and once again, chia, pumpkin, and sesame seeds. Oh, and don't forget spinach. Deficiencies of both amino acids are rare, but any medical condition or dietary regimen that reduces intake of these amino acids would consequently affect dopamine production in the brain. Supplements for these amino acids are also available. In this case, I recommend supplementing with the natural form L-phenylalanine as opposed to D and DL-phenylalanine, which are synthetic forms. Always ask your healthcare provider for advice before taking any supplements. Glutamate. Ready, set, go. Or wait, hit the brakes. I once read an interesting analogy about how the brain handles decision-making. Picture this. Someone walks into the room holding a steaming slice of hot pizza, and you think, "Wow, I want that pizza, and I want it now." The neurons responsible for initiating your acting on that thought are about to send impulses skyrocketing across your brain to achieve your aim. When suddenly, another thought comes to mind. Maybe I shouldn't eat pizza because, truth be told, I am trying to lose weight. A different group of neurons immediately sends a counterimpulse to put everything on hold. But then you smell that pizza again and decide that you'll eat a little bit of it anyway. Just as the team pizza neurons start firing in all directions, ready to celebrate their win, you discover that you don't have any cash on you. The team "don't do it" neurons respond by putting an end to the discussion once and for all. You sigh and go about your business, if a little disappointed at the outcome. The point is that your brain can both initiate an action and constrain the same action, all at an incredible speed. This is possible due to the fact that we possess different neurotransmitters to achieve differing goals. There are excitatory neurotransmitters, which push neurons to transmit signals, and inhibitory neurotransmitters, which make signal transmission less likely. Consider it the yin and yang of neurotransmission, or a devil and an angel on each of your shoulders. Glutamate is the main excitatory neurotransmitter of our entire nervous system from head to toe. It's the one that makes you reach for your wallet to buy the pizza. To get a better sense of how important this little molecule is, consider that more than 90% of all your brain synapses are primed to release glutamate. That makes for a lot of glutamate action going on. At the same time, glutamate is also used by the brain to produce its alter ego, gamma-aminobutyric acid, GABA, the major inhibitory neurotransmitter of our nervous system. So, not only does glutamate prompt you to get that slice of pizza, it can also stop you from having that slice in the first place. But it doesn't end here. As it turns out, glutamate features prominently in yet another crucial area of brain health. It also assists in learning and memory. Here's the story. The connections between two or more neurons are strengthened or weakened depending on how often these neurons are activated in tandem. According to the theory of Hebb, one of the most famous theories in the field of neuroscience, neurons that fire together wire together, while those that fire out of sync lose their link. It is widely believed that this process, called long-term potentiation, LTP, is based on glutamate, or a slightly different version of glutamate that goes by the rather impressive name of N-methyl-D-aspartate, or NMDA for short. NMDA possesses its own specific set of receptors in the memory centers of the brain. These receptors act as gates, which are generally kept locked. Glutamate, in the form of NMDA, is the key to opening these locks. When the neurotransmitter arrives, the gates open, allowing information to flow into the neuron. Over time, the more frequently this happens, the longer the gates will stay open. The feedback loop that ensues forms the basis of synaptic plasticity, which is the biological equivalent of memory formation. But let's put all this information into a brain-food context. Our ability to initiate an action to refrain from doing something, and to form long-term memories are all dependent on the amino acid glutamate. Glutamate, or glutamic acid, is a non-essential amino acid, which means that the brain is capable of producing it on its own. However, once again, there is a catch. The brain needs the sugar glucose to make glutamate. Glutamate is formed when the brain breaks down glucose in a process called metabolism, which is the very same process the brain uses to make energy. This makes most of our mental activities highly dependent on our dietary choices, and specifically on our intake of carbohydrates. 6. Carbs, sugars, and more sweet things. Not all carbs are created equal. As described in the previous chapter, the brain is a particularly talkative organ. Its activity requires a continued fueling of the electrical impulses neurons use to produce the neurotransmitters and communicate with one another. This awe-inspiring process requires a tremendous amount of energy. One of the very first questions that nutritionists sought to answer in their quest of a healthy diet was, "What keeps us running?" Carbohydrates figured prominently in the answer. There are many different forms of carbohydrates, classified according to their chemical composition, as well as their capacity to provide energy. There are carbs that provide quick energy, such as simple sugars like honey, and there are complex carbs that require more digestion for their components to be fully absorbed by the body and consequently provide time-released energy, such as whole wheat and brown rice. It was the quick energy type of carbohydrates, the simple sugars, that prompted early nutritionists to recognize these nutrients as the main energy source and fuel for the body as a whole. But of all organs in the body, the brain is the one that needs them above all. This is yet another major difference between the brain and the body. While the body can use both fat and sugar for energy, the brain relies exclusively on a sugar called glucose. In other words, all the energy our hungry brains need, every ounce of it, comes exclusively from glucose. Before sounding the alarm, sugar, consider that there is nothing exceptional about this. Normally, human bodies are sugar-driven machines. Glucose is the go-to nutrient and the quickest way for the entire body to obtain energy. Whenever you eat foods that are naturally rich in carbohydrates, these are ultimately broken down into glucose, which is quickly absorbed in the bloodstream and transported all over the body to be immediately used for energy through the process of metabolism. Glucose readily crosses the blood-brain barrier to feed all those voracious billions of cells that populate your brain. So don't let the statistics mislead you. While it is true that carbohydrates only account for a very small percentage of the brain's physical composition, there is a never-ending 24/7 influx of glucose inside the brain. Since its work is so demanding, glucose is expended at such a rapid-fire rate, it simply doesn't have time to slow down and accumulate in tissues. Where is all this glucose coming from? Our diet, of course. From a neuronutrition perspective, carbohydrates like glucose are far from being the enemy, as they are essential for proper brain activity and cognitive performance. The human brain is so critically dependent on glucose that it even developed sophisticated mechanisms to convert other sugars into glucose. For example, fructose, a sugar found in most fruit and honey, as well as lactose, found in milk and dairy, can both be transformed into glucose as a quick fix whenever our glucose runs too low. However, if you are about to reach out for a sugary snack, hold on. When we talk about carbs, we are not talking about cupcakes. Also, we are not talking about stuffing ourselves silly. Although glucose is one of the few nutrients to be granted immediate entry into the brain, its entry is tightly regulated. In accordance with a strict supply and demand model, specific sugar gates are present in the blood-brain barrier that open when the brain needs glucose and close once enough glucose has been supplied. If your brain is active and needs glucose to work, it will take up as much glucose as it needs from the bloodstream. But if your brain is feeling satisfied and doesn't need more glucose than it has already absorbed, that last bite of pasta or spoonful of gelato won't make your brain work any harder or better. It would only be facing a closed door. It might make you gain a few pounds in other parts of your body, though. Once inside the brain, whatever little glucose isn't immediately used to make energy is converted into a substance called glycogen and stored away for future use. This is an efficient way of saving useful calories and providing your brain with an energy reserve that will keep you going in between meals. However, glycogen stores are minimal. Our reserves would last no more than a day if needed. When carbohydrate supply is limited, usually below 50 grams per day, the equivalent of 3 slices of bread, glycogen stores are quickly depleted, leaving our working brains in potential jeopardy. But ingenious as ever, our brains have a plan B. If carbohydrate supply runs too low, plan B goes into effect, and the brain turns to the liver to start burning adipose fat and produces a new type of molecule called a ketone body. Ketone bodies are the only backup energy source for our brains. You might have heard of ketone bodies if you've ever been on certain low-carb diets. One in particular is called the ketogenic or keto diet, and it is a neuronutritionist's nightmare. It is high in saturated fat and very low in carbohydrates and fiber, which forces the liver to burn all available sugars before turning to fat to stabilize blood sugar levels. At the same time, burning fat can promote weight loss and, according to some, even mental well-being. We'll talk more about the keto diet in Chapter 9. For now, keep in mind that while it is true that the brain can use ketones in place of glucose, this is the exception, not the rule. Burning ketones instead of glucose is the body's providential mechanism reserved for extremes, such as starvation. Were the brain able to ask you for nourishment, it would not be asking for ketones. More important, the brain cannot run solely on these molecules. It still requires no less than 30% of its energy from glucose. All in all, the brain runs best on glucose. In fact, it is so vulnerable to sugar deficiencies that any interruption in glucose supply causes a near immediate failure of brain function, as can be seen from the rapid loss of consciousness caused by severe hypoglycemia, very low blood sugar. Especially as we age, we need to ensure that our brains have access to all the glucose needed to maintain functionality and mental sharpness on a daily basis. Desperately seeking glucose. Carbohydrates are controversial when it comes to dieting, but from the brain's perspective, what differentiates good carbs from bad carbs is actually the food's specific glucose supply. Glucose has been the main subject of my research since college. Over the years, I've looked at glucose in every possible way, from blood tests to brain scans. Your brain needs it, no matter how many dietologists, doctors, or journalists tell you that carbohydrates are bad for you. The brain runs on glucose, and glucose is a carbohydrate. The problem is, when most people say carbs, they think of white food, sugar, bread, pasta, and baked goods. As sugary as these foods might taste, they are not good sources of glucose. So where can we find this precious sugar? Foods that we wouldn't have necessarily thought of as sugary, such as onions, turnips, red beets, and rutabaga, turn out to be the best natural sources of glucose. The red beet, in particular, is nature's candy. A small red beet alone contains 31% of all the glucose you need for the day. Fruits like kiwi, grapes, raisins, and dates are also excellent, as are honey and maple syrup. Whether we're speaking generally or looking for a brain pick-me-up, these foods are much better natural sources than others because they provide us with our precious glucose while minimizing the total amount of sugar ingested. Instead, sugary foods like candy, cookies, and even orange juice contain plenty of other sugars, but hardly any glucose. For comparison, white table sugar is 100% sucrose, a different type of sugar. This brings us to the next question. How much glucose do we need? Believe it or not, you won't find the answer on the internet. In fact, as of today, there are no dietary requirements for glucose, or for carbohydrates for that matter. We need to turn to science to find the answer. The best way to look at brain metabolism is through PET scans. For many years, I have been using PET to study the way the brain burns glucose to produce energy, glucose metabolism, and its relationship to cognitive functions such as memory, attention, and reasoning. While everybody is more or less familiar with MRI scans, not many people know what a PET scan actually is. Have you ever seen one of those pictures of the brain painted in bright red and yellow, or the darker hues of blue and green? Those are PET scans. The brightly colored areas are the more active of the brain, while the darker ones show a lower brain activity. Since the brain uses exclusively glucose from our diet to stay active and produce energy, we are actually looking at the brain burning glucose from our foods. This procedure involves injecting a small amount of glucose into the bloodstream. The glucose then rapidly enters the brain and flows straight to the most active regions in the brain, since that's where fuel is needed most. But we've done something special with this glucose. It is attached to a unique radioactive ingredient called fluorine-18, which glows as it's deposited into the brain. We then use a brain scanner to detect its light, which, thanks to its varying intensity, demonstrates the degree and location of metabolic activity taking place inside your head. Scientists have used this method to discover the exact amount of glucose a healthy brain consumes on a daily basis. In technical terms, the brain burns an average of 32 micromoles of glucose per 100 grams of brain tissue per minute. In plain English, this means that to stay active and healthy, a vital adult brain needs about 62 grams of glucose over a 24-hour period. Some brains need a bit more, some need a bit less to function at their optimal level. Do 62 grams of glucose sound like a lot of sugar? It isn't. In fact, it is less than 250 calories a day. And more important, it can't be just any sugar. It has to be glucose. For example, 3 tablespoons of raw honey will give your brain all the glucose it needs for the day. As a comparison, you'd need to eat 16 pounds of chocolate chip cookies to achieve the same goal. Sugar highs and sugar lows. In addition to focusing on the glucose content of the food we eat, we also need to pay attention to our total sugar intake over the course of the day. A major downside of the brain's reliance on glucose is that our mental sharpness is highly vulnerable to any drops in blood sugar levels. Therefore, we need to provide adequate amounts of glucose while keeping our blood sugar levels stable, an essential for proper brain function. Additionally, you don't want your blood sugar to be too high either. As any diabetic patient knows only too well, blood sugar levels can easily run amok. But for the vast majority of the population, high blood sugar doesn't occur because of a medical condition or because your DNA has a sweet tooth. It all comes down to what you're eating. This is how it works. Blood sugar levels are regulated by a hormone called insulin. The pancreas secretes insulin when there are large amounts of sugar in a meal. Insulin helps cells and tissues take up that sugar for energy, while at the same time removing the sugar from our bloodstream. People who consume high quantities of sugar, especially refined white sugar on a regular basis, end up overworking their pancreas and exhausting their insulin sensitivity. Once the pancreas is burnt out, blood sugar levels will remain high regardless of the amount of insulin produced. This leads to a medical condition called insulin resistance, in which the body produces insulin but isn't able to use it efficiently. When people have insulin resistance, glucose builds up in the blood, altering the body's metabolism to its great detriment. Insulin resistance has become a frighteningly common condition in the United States. In 2012, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services estimated that at least 86 million American adults, ages 20 or older, had insulin resistance or prediabetes. The prevalence is estimated to rise even more in the future. People with insulin resistance are at high risk for type 2 diabetes, obesity, and heart disease, which have long been recognized as risk factors for dementia. As many as 6 to 8% of all dementia cases are attributed to type 2 diabetes, while heart disease and stroke account for another 25% of patients. As an additional side effect, insulin resistance is coupled with increased fat accumulation, which only worsens one's metabolic imbalance, with terrible repercussions for the health of our brains. Moreover, the hippocampus itself, the brain region specialized in memory, can actually experience insulin resistance. Without going into too much detail, insulin resistance can lead to brain inflammation and accelerated free radical production, making it very hard to remember anything at all. Not as sweet as it seems. Have you ever experienced the highs and lows caused when your blood sugar levels jump too high and then come crashing down? Have you noticed how weak and fatigued you feel afterward? That's the candy bar effect, and it doesn't do you or your brain any good. As mentioned, high blood sugar levels cause inflammation, insulin resistance, metabolic disorders, and type 2 diabetes, which, in turn, raise one's risk of dementia. But you don't even have to go as far as actually having diabetes to be in trouble. Research shows that high blood sugar levels can have a damaging effect on the brain, especially as we age. For example, a study tracked blood sugar levels of over 2,000 elderly people for 7 years to compare high blood sugar with the possibility of poor cognitive outcomes later in life. While none of the participants had dementia when the study began, many of those with high blood sugar levels developed dementia over the course of the study. The higher the amount of sugar in the blood, the higher the risk of dementia, even at glucose levels considered normal in standard glucose tests, less than 120 milligrams per deciliter. In other words, sugar levels that are tolerable for the body as a whole might in fact be too high for our delicate brains. Even more disconcerting evidence comes from brain imaging studies showing that dementia-free elderly with high sugar levels exhibit not only decreased memory performance, but also accelerated brain shrinkage, as shown on MRIs. This correlation was also found in participants without a trace of diabetes and was particularly dramatic in the memory regions of the brain. As a society, if we want to preserve our memories and lower our risk of mental deterioration and diabetes, we urgently need to limit our sugar intake to just the amount and sort the brain really needs. This means focusing on healthy sources of glucose while reducing our intake of those insulin-crashing bad sugars to keep our metabolism strong and steady. Unfortunately, the typical American plate is filled with processed food and refined grains and is often accompanied by large, or by the rest of the world standards gigantic, cups of soda on the side, each one brimming with concentrated sugar. It's just as common to see people snacking on candy bars, fluffy white flour products, and extra-large, sugar-enriched fancy coffee drinks. According to the nutrient data provided by Starbucks, a tall, which is actually their smallest portion offered, caramel chocolate frappuccino blended creme provides 300 calories of goodness. But hidden behind its inviting appearance, you'll find a whopping 48 grams of refined white sugar. If that weren't enough, you have the option to top it all off with an additional hearty dollop of whipped cream. And if you're looking for fiber, look elsewhere. The bottom line is that we eat far too much of the sort of sugar that makes us fat, and not enough of the kind of sugar that makes us smart. For our own good, we owe it to ourselves and our children to correct this. A good way to keep an eye on sugar intake is to pay attention to a food's glycemic index. The glycemic index is a nutrition rating system that ranks foods based on their ability to affect blood sugar levels. If a food metabolizes quickly into sugar, and the sugar is absorbed quickly into the bloodstream, the food gets a high rating because of its ability to cause an unhealthy insulin spike in your body. If a food barely raises your blood sugar, it is assigned a low score instead. Additionally, it's important to look at the glycemic load of your food. This is a similar system that ranks foods not only in terms of how quickly they produce a sugar response, but also by the amount of fiber a food contains. The more fiber, the lower the overall food's effects on insulin. In terms of brain activity, foods that metabolize quickly into sugar and contain very little fiber are the worst you can eat. These include sugary beverages, sweetened fruit juices, baked goods, and candy, as well as white flour foods such as pasta and pizza. Instead, complex carbs and starches are more fibrous and difficult for your body to break down, and the slower breakdown results in less of a blood sugar spike. Sweet potatoes or yams, especially eaten with the skin on, fiber-rich fruits like berries and grapefruit, and vegetables such as pumpkin, butternut squash, and carrots are all excellent lower glycemic foods. Other choices such as legumes, lentils, garbanzo beans and black beans, and whole grains, with their husks still on, also provide you with more stable sugar levels, while at the same time being a good source of brain essential glucose. In other words, if you have a sweet tooth, the trick is to load up on fiber. From a nutritional perspective, fibers are divided into soluble and insoluble fiber. Soluble fiber, like that found in oatmeal, blueberries, and Brussels sprouts, is the kind of fiber that turns into a gel-like texture as you eat, slowing down your digestion and making you feel fuller longer. Insoluble fiber, like that found in wheat bran and dark leafy greens, does not dissolve during digestion at all, adding bulk to your stool. This in turn helps your digestive tract eliminate waste more quickly. Many whole foods, especially fruits and vegetables, naturally contain both soluble and insoluble fiber. Besides offsetting your insulin response, the amount of fiber in your diet plays a major role in supporting your gut and immune health. Diets that are low in fiber are typically associated with constipation, gastrointestinal, GI disorders, inflammation, and an increased risk of some cancers, like colon cancer. Those countries whose diets are dependent upon frequent fast food consumption and little or no fresh produce, such as the United States, top the list of low-fiber eaters, consuming as little as 10 to 15 grams of fiber a day, which also correlates with high rates of GI issues in our country. As we'll see in Chapter 8, if your gut isn't healthy, your brain will suffer as well, which further underlines the importance of eating fiber for optimal brain health. In conclusion, to make your brain happy, focus on low-glycemic, high-fiber foods as the main source of carbs in your diet, and indulge in high-glycemic foods only in small amounts and infrequently. If you, like me, can't go without an occasional treat, do not despair. Some foods that qualify as treats still possess an overall low glycemic load, making a better food for you than originally thought. For example, a square of organic dark chocolate, 70% or higher, has a low glycemic load, which makes it satisfying without the sugar rush. Same for popcorn. I invite you to check my website, www.lisamosconi.com, for several glucose-rich, lip-smacking treats that you can indulge in that won't compromise your blood sugar levels nearly as much as a candy bar would. 7. Making sense of vitamins and minerals. Have you been taking your vitamins? Vitamins play an essential role in our brain's activity, growth, and vitality. Although they are not a source of direct energy, vitamins assist the brain in energy production. More specifically, they provide the key the brain needs to unlock the energy stored in the foods we eat, and to activate a variety of metabolic processes that would be in danger of failing in their absence. The importance of vitamins in relationship to optimal health has been understood by healers throughout recorded history and has long been a subject of scientific study. In particular, the discovery of vitamin deficiencies was a stepping stone toward the recognition that nutrient deficiencies are at the heart of so many diseases once thought unavoidable. We now know that vitamins are crucial to boosting our immune system, for absorption and elimination of other nutrients, and even more important, to produce neurotransmitters, the chemical messengers of the brain. As a result, several neurological diseases are made worse or even caused by vitamin deficiencies. Lack of vitamin B1, thiamine, is implicated in degeneration of the nervous system, polyneuropathy, and in Wernicke-Korsakoff syndrome, a brain disorder that can evolve into dementia. Insufficient levels of vitamins B6, pyridoxine, and B12, cobalamin, also can lead to dementia. Deficiencies of vitamin B9, folate, are known to cause neural tube defects of the fetus, leading to cognitive dysfunctions later in life. And the list goes on. All these vitamins come from the foods we eat. Most vitamins cannot be manufactured in our brains or bodies at all, and therefore belong to the group of brain essential nutrients that need to be obtained from our diet. When you eat fresh vegetables or fruits, the vitamins they release in the bloodstream travel all the way up to the brain, where they are received by their dedicated transport systems and are happily welcomed across the blood-brain barrier. Vitamins are usually broken down into two categories: fat-soluble, i.e. dissolve in fat, and water-soluble, i.e. dissolve in water. They are further defined by chemical names and subtypes, such as vitamin B6 or B12. Fat-soluble vitamins include vitamins A, D, E, and K. An advantage of fat-soluble vitamins is that they can be stored in the fat of our bodily tissues, and as a result, don't need to be continuously replenished. Among these vitamins, two are known for their brain-protective properties: vitamin A, via its precursor beta-carotene, and vitamin E. Both these vitamins have antioxidant functions that protect brain cells and tissues from the harmful effects of toxins, free radicals, and even pollution. Moreover, vitamin E increases delivery and absorption of oxygen into brain tissue, which is essential for optimal function and metabolic activity. All other vitamins are water-soluble. Water-soluble vitamins cannot be stored, and as such, they are required daily in our diets. These include a number of vitamins that are essential for brain function, such as vitamin C, vitamin B12, vitamin B6, folate, and choline. In general, the major value of these vitamins is their ability to make things happen. They are the go-getters of the brain. Their role is to facilitate the action of our neurotransmitters, sometimes even becoming part of a neurotransmitter itself. This is crucial for proper communication between brain cells. Choline is an example of how this all plays out. Cherish your memories with choline. The brain depends on choline, a B vitamin, to manufacture the neurotransmitter acetylcholine. Acetylcholine is one of the main brain neurotransmitters, as it is crucial for memory and learning, as well as arousal and reward. If you or a loved one has Alzheimer's, you have probably heard of how the memory loss, typical of the disease, is associated with a shortage of acetylcholine. Most available drugs for Alzheimer's, like donepezil, Aricept, are aimed at improving the action of this chemical in the brain. However, anyone can be low in this neurotransmitter because of their diets. Since choline is an essential nutrient that the brain needs but is not able to produce on its own, the production of acetylcholine is limited by how much choline is reaching the brain at any given moment. Approximately 10% of the total amount of choline circulating in the body is produced by our liver. We must rely on our diet to provide the remaining 90% needed. For example, eggs are among the richest sources of choline. Eating a 5-egg omelet nearly quadruples choline levels within a few hours, making this nutrient readily available to the brain for acetylcholine production. But if you are eating a diet deficient in choline, you will likely cause an acetylcholine deficiency in your brain, affecting your memory as the byproduct. Unfortunately, as much as 90% of the American population is deficient in choline. This begs the question, is it easy to eat enough of this vital brain nutrient? Not particularly. According to current dietary guidelines, if you are an adult woman, you and your brain need at least 425 milligrams of choline daily, while men need about 550 milligrams daily. In practical terms, if you are an adult woman, you can get your 425 milligrams of choline by eating 22 grapefruits, or 3 pounds of broccoli, or half a chicken, or you can eat 3 eggs. If you are an adult man, you'll need more of the same food, so 27 grapefruits, 4 pounds of broccoli, 2 pounds of chicken, or about 4 eggs, every day. This is not to suggest that you should eat several pounds of broccoli a day, nor a case of grapefruit, but it does serve to clarify 2 very interesting things. First of all, it makes it clear that some foods are more choline-dense than others, and therefore more brain-supportive. For example, it's easier to enjoy a 3-egg omelet than to ingest 22 grapefruits. Second, this shows that eating right for your brain is both literally and figuratively not a piece of cake. Let's now take a look at the foods that best provide the choline necessary to boost our brain's acetylcholine levels. Egg yolks top the list, with a whopping 682 milligrams of choline per 100 grams of yolk, or about 4 eggs. Since stuffing yourself with egg yolks might be a tad impractical, a combination of different choline-rich foods is arguably the best solution. Other choline-rich foods include fish eggs, caviar, most fish, organ meat, e.g., liver, kidney, brain, and heart, shiitake mushrooms, wheat germ, quinoa, peanuts, and almonds. As an additional assist, nutritional supplements can be helpful. Here's a shortcut that might do the trick. Brewer's yeast, the one that's used to make beer, not to bake cakes, is a great natural source of choline, though an acquired taste for some. Marmite, a product that features brewer's yeast as its main ingredient, is a regular staple in most English and Australian kitchens. Since first being manufactured in the early 1900s, this savory spread has been praised for its high nutritional value, so much so that it was included in every soldier's rations during World War I. Considering it takes only a couple of tablespoons of brewer's yeast to reach our daily choline requirements, sprinkling this food on cooked vegetables and salads, or adding to soups and stews, is a smart way to boost your choline levels. I always add some to my soups. One word of caution, although it's quite difficult to eat too many foods rich in choline, keep in mind that excessive choline can be toxic. In general, no more than 3,500 milligrams for adult men and women is recommended as a daily dosage. Vitamin B6, the passe-partout to brain activity. As mentioned in Chapter 5, the brain wouldn't be able to produce neurotransmitters, such as serotonin, dopamine, or GABA, without the help of vitamin B6. So keep your B6 vitamin intake front and center. This vitamin must be obtained from our diet on a daily basis. Vitamin B6 is widely available in many natural foods. The best natural sources include sunflower seeds and pistachios, as well as fish, especially tuna, shellfish, chicken, turkey, lean beef, and organ meat. Other good sources can be found in sweet potatoes, avocado, leafy green vegetables, cabbage, bananas, and whole grain products such as wheat bran and germ. Among all veggies, garlic is surprisingly rich in B6. A little more than 100 grams of garlic would provide all necessary B6 intake for the day. Unfortunately, 100 grams of garlic is equal to 40 fresh garlic cloves, which would be a challenge to ingest. Not to mention what it would do to your breath. Vampires or not, that's too much garlic. Royal jelly, a more potent version of honey, is also a rich source. Personally, I take a teaspoon of royal jelly complete with bee pollen almost daily for their known, though perhaps not scientifically confirmed, natural antibiotic effects. Try drizzling it over yogurt and top it all with chia seeds and crushed pistachios for a perfect serotonin-boosting snack. Vitamin B6 supplements are also readily available in over-the-counter capsules or tablets. While toxicity is unlikely to occur from natural food sources, it is recommended that our daily intake of B6 not exceed 100 milligrams per day for adult men and women. So when using supplements, always keep an eye on the dosages. More B vitamins. What protects the heart protects the brain. Now let's turn our attention to a substance called homocysteine. As doctors have long known, high homocysteine, hyperhomocysteinemia, is a strong risk factor for stroke, which in turn is a major risk factor for dementia. accounting for as many as 25% of all cases. Worse still, research shows that high homocysteine levels affect cognitive function even in people without strokes. Typically, in a lab test, homocysteine and